Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues, the name of this program. I am Tim Wildman, and Ed Vitagliano is with me. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Walker Wildman is not here today. I don't know when we'll see Walker this week. he's remodeling a house, doing demo, doing HGTV stuff. So maybe
with a sledgehammer.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah,
that's what he's doing.
Bless
right
his
now.
Heart.
Bless his heart, right, Fred? Fred Jackson with me. Good morning, Fred.
I'm glad to be here and not remodeling a house.
I know. You watch those HGTV shows, though?
Yeah,
you know what
I'm watching. I'm amazed at the talent of some
of these
people
that
come in, you know.
They're pretty interesting. It's pretty interesting. But Allison, my wife, and I, we watch that those various shows on that network off and on for a year or two. But, you know, you reach a point in your life where you go, do I really need to watch one more show? About people knocking down walls.
You know what show I
you
don't watch?
Saying?
Diana
will
watch them every once in a while. Is these ones where these really rich people want to buy a vacation home in Hawaii or something.
Yeah. I know.
And they're looking. I just go, that kind of money is just inconceivable to me.
Yeah, they ask,
our vacation home.
What's your budget? Oh, it's $1.3 million for a vacation home.
We can't go over that.
I just go, come on. Are you serious? The people with that kind of money? Certainly not in my family or my wife's family.
Is that jealousy, envy, or covetousness?
It's all of them, all wrapped up.
So, well, you know, you do watch, you watch these shows, some of those shows, and the Property Brothers or some of those shows, and you do comparisons with, what you're used to paying for.
Right.
For housing. Of course, we live in Northeast Mississippi. Well, if you live in Northeast Mississippi, what you can get here compared to what you can get in California or Dallas-Fort Worth, for example, you can get you can't believe what people will pay for a 2,500 square foot home.
Yeah.
You know, it's just amazing. So you're right to your point. You're going there in Malibu, California, whatever, for filming some show, and they're going, oh, we got a 1,500 square foot home, you know, on a cliff with rocks above it, and it's in danger of a mudslide. We're going to have to stay within that $1 million budget.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to see if we can do it on today's show.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going, $1 million for 1,500 square, and look at it, it's a dump. You know what I'm saying? So I guess it is all about location.
That's right.
Oh, absolutely.
As they say.
The other part of all that are the flip shows. You know, somebody goes in, buys one, and hopes to put a little money in it. You know, I've talked to people who've watched those shows, and I'm going to get into that because I can make
flipping.
A lot of money with that.
Yeah.
Never works out.
It doesn't.
Never works out.
Oh, only on TV?
It works out really well on TV, and everybody gets the idea, hey, listen, I can do that. I'll go down. But what they don't show, this is a half-hour show, folks.
Yeah.
They're not showing everything.
Yeah, it'd be kind of hard to do a show where you go, after one episode, this show's off because our people went out of business because it didn't work.
Yeah,
the flipping doesn't work. So we got one show episode, you know. Series.
Yeah, you want to show on camera the wife going, this was your idea. Now what are we going to do?
Now we're broke.
Our kids can't go to college.
Now we're broke. How do you like that? All right. Because you wanted to flip a house like they do on TV. All right. Hope you had a great weekend, everybody, and with so much to talk about in the news, I guess, Fred, leading the news is a story that has to do with Washington, D.C. and the press corps there. They had their annual
White House Correspondents' Dinner Saturday night.
Okay.
And, you know, last Thursday, everybody put their hands up. How many ever heard of Michelle Wolf? I didn't.
No.
I didn't know who she was. But a lot of people know who she is now. She was the guest speaker at this White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Comedian.
She wrote for, she's written for one of the shows, is it?
Yeah, Trevor Noah on the Comedy Channel and Daily Show, I think.
Something like that.
John Stewart.
Anyway, there was controversy leading up to it because President Trump said he wasn't going to go. In past years, other presidents have gone, and they do a little ribbing of the press and kind of even poke fun on themselves sometimes, and then there's some speaker gets up and they poke fun back. That's the way it has been. But on Saturday night, Michelle Wolf is now making headlines because of what she said and the tone of her remarks. I think, Ed, you listened to the whole...
I watched her routine.
Yeah.
This is along, for those who are listening and saying, well, what is this? It's along the lines of a roast.
Yeah.
You know, people, you know, in the past, comedians would roast a particular well-known person. And at these, traditionally, these are supposed to be kind of good-natured, poking fun at your political adversaries or those in the journalistic field.
Yeah. That's the way it's supposed to be.
Supposed to be.
All right. So on Saturday night, she talks for about 22 minutes. And unlike last year, there were representatives of the Trump administration there. For instance, Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Most people know she handles the press at the Daily Briefing.
Right.
She is former Arkansas Governor Huckabee's daughter. And there were a few others. I think Kellyanne Conway.
She was in the audience.
Yeah, she was in the audience as well. I'm not sure. I think Ed Henry from Fox News was in the audience. All right. So you have these two representatives, at least, of the Trump administration sitting there. In fact, Sarah Huckabee Sanders was like two people away from the podium. So she's sitting there. Up on
She's on the platform.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's on the platform. This woman gets up. And here's a little bit of what that speech from Michelle Wolf from Saturday Night, Cut One.
We should definitely talk about the women in the Trump administration. Mm. There's Kellyanne Conway. You guys got to stop putting Kellyanne on your shows. All she does is lie. If you don't give her a platform, she has nowhere to lie. It's like that old saying, if a tree falls in the woods, how do we get Kellyanne under that tree? And of course, we have Sarah Huckabee Sanders. We are graced with Sarah's presence tonight. And I'm never really sure what to call Sarah Huckabee Sanders. You know, is it Sarah Sanders? Is it Sarah Huckabee Sanders? Is it Cousin Huckabee? Is it Auntie Huckabee Sanders? Like, what's Uncle Tom but for white women who disappoint other white women?
So I didn't get that joke. Is that a joke?
Yeah, Does
that need to be explained to me, and maybe we don't need to have the time?
Well, she was, first of all, making fun of her because she's from Arkansas. So, you know, cousin.
Oh, I got you.
But then, you know, auntie, you know, I guess, you know, up north we would have said auntie, you know, but auntie, you know. And then she was basically saying that she's the woman's version of an Uncle Tom.
I got that part.
Yeah, but her first of all, her voice is
whose
almost
voice?
Intolerable.
That woman right there.
Yeah, Michelle Wolf. It just for 20 minutes it was just hard to take. But she was, and that's not all that she said. Do we have more clips of her insulting Sarah Huckabee Sanders?
She made fun of
her makeup and.
Oh yeah, we had to be careful because there was a lot of vulgarity in the speech.
It was one of the smuttiest things I've ever heard.
Who hired this woman to do this?
I guess the White House Correspondents Association.
A bunch of Trump haters.
Well, that's the way it's going to look from now on.
Yeah.
Because in years past, you'd make fun of the Republicans or the Democrats, their position on something or. But when you realize what she said about Kellyanne Conway, there was no humor about, you know, her position on this or that. She just called her a liar.
No, it's not good-natured ribbing,
right?
Or making fun of things that are not personal in nature.
She eventually made fun of Sarah Huckabee Sanders' eye makeup, the way she does her makeup.
That woman right there is a God hater.
Oh yeah, I have no doubt.
She's a God hater. She writes. She writes for what show?
Well, I don't know if she still does Trevor Noah on Comedy Central. I don't know if she's still writing for the Comedy
she's
Central.
She's going to have her own show on Netflix. This woman, read that. Yeah.
Well, she's going to be in the same pattern as Paula Poundstone and Sarah Silverman.
But you know,
vile, sex oriented.
We were talking this morning at a meeting, and Brian Fisher made this observation. Brian said, you know, you used to hear women talk like this.
Yeah.
Maybe men talk like this, or they used to talk like this. You know, this would be like an Andrew Dice Clay HBO pay-per-view special or something like that. Or Eddie Murphy, he used to dub stuff like this. Richard Pryor back in the 70s. But it was always a bootleg tape or something you had to, you know, you certainly never would have heard a woman talk like this out in public.
Right.
I mean, this was just vile, ugly, mean-spirited, you know, kick you in the face and the stomach, watch you bleed and laugh about it type stuff.
That's 95% of the stuff that she used Michelle Wolf, was vile and degenerate sexual humor.
Right.
And
that's mainstream now.
We wouldn't want to talk about it on the air, but what we just played is just some of the meanness that she exhibited there was no foul language.
However, we're going to play a clip of Michelle Malkin. She was on Fox and Friends this morning. Michelle Malkin, conservative commentator. Here's the issue. You know how there have been a lot of headlines about first candidate Donald Trump and now President Trump, that he demeans women, et cetera, et cetera. All right, we've heard all of that. What Michelle Malkin is going to say, the left, including women on the left, they have no problem of being unmerciful to conservative women.
Right.
So here's Michelle Malkin, cut two.
And I have to say, it's a complete disgrace that there wasn't a single person on the dais that interrupted that woman as filth was coming out of her mouth. And I cannot tell you how proud I was to be a conservative woman to see the dignity with which Sarah Sanders bore those slings and arrows. And that is why we have to turn this around on the leadership at the White House Correspondents Association.
Right.
Because actually, Michelle Wolf is right. They knew what they were getting and they wanted it. I've been the target of a hate rape list along with other prominent conservative women. Look at what happened to Sarah Palin during her vice presidential candidacy. They called on gang rape for her. They called on assassination. They used the worst kind of vile imagery of any conservative woman who dares to stray from the liberal orthodox plantation.
So there you have it. Some excellent comments. And she's exactly right. You know, this, as I said, this attack against President Trump because he treats women meanly, and we've had the whole demonstration.
What's an example of that besides 12 years ago on a videotape from Entertainment Tonight?
Exactly.
Give me another example of President Trump treating women meanly, and that was an off-camera comment that he made. He never thought he was being taped. Yes, it was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It was terrible to say something like that, but it was locker room type. Talking about saying but like it excuses him, but it's kind of like Timothy McVeigh when they talk about right wing extremism, terrorism. They always bring up Timothy McVeigh. We go back to the Trump videotape from 12 years ago or 13 years ago when they say that President Trump treats women.
Mm-hmm.
Give me another. Got another example maybe since then that you can pull out that he, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They whip that out every time. When you criticize, for example, not you, Fred, personally, but when we criticize this woman,
Michelle Wolf,
for her vileness, they'll say, "Oh yeah, but you support Trump, and he says this about grabbing a woman's privates or something like that." You know what I'm saying? So, now the interesting thing here is, Fred and Ed, that this was so mean spirited. This speech by this. This routine, as you called it, Ed, by this wolf lady, she's not really a lady, that even liberal media are criticizing her for doing this.
Yeah.
Not just Michelle Malkin.
Nope. Maggie Haberman of the New York Times. That press secretary sat and absorbed intense criticism of her physical appearance, her job performance, and so forth, instead of walking out on national television. Was impressive. That's a writer with the New York Times.
Right.
Andrea Mitchell, I think most people are familiar with her. Apology is owed to press secretary and others grossly insulted by Michelle Wolf at the White House Correspondents Association dinner, which started with uplifting heartfelt speech. And then it's the worst speech, Andrea Mitchell says, since Don Imus insulted the Clintons.
Yeah. And this now ABC's John Carl, who's a White House Correspondents Association's board member. Now, he said apparently on Good Morning America, he said, quote, "I think the comedian crossed the line and this went from poking fun to being mean-spirited," end quote. I don't think that's strong enough.
No.
I think he should have used words like disgusting, disgraceful, like Michelle Malkin did. But that's what it was.
Even the CNN president was critical of this.
Yeah. But Michelle Malkin was right. Nobody got up from that day and said, "This is enough.
Yeah.
Sit down. This is gone."
They let her go for 20 minutes.
She did her whole speech.
She did her whole speech. They never stopped her.
Yeah. Right. This is the fault. Whoever's in charge of this should be fired today if they're serious about being.
Right.
Otherwise, this thing's over far as having any future.
Because President Trump's not going to come, which I don't blame him. No. Because why sit through this kind of just insult? Nothing good natured about it. No. Just joking around. And so if he doesn't go now, I bet next year you won't have anyone from the White House press from the administration's press office going. So is this just going to be a group for liberals? And then liberals will just poke fun at conservatives. Well, then it's over.
Yeah, let them have Madonna burn down the White House.
Right,
come and sing for them.
And all this is going to do is continue to degrade the opinion of the American people about journalism.
Yeah,
and they are literally cutting their own throats if they continue with this for the entirety of the Trump administration, because it's going to become clear. Who's going to attend? CNN will be there, MSNBC, NBC, CBS. They'll attend, and everyone will go, "Well, I knew they were in the tank for the Democrats all along." They're just hurting themselves.
This could potentially help President Trump, though, if you want to look at it politically, because he can use these clips from this event to say, look what I'm up against. All these Washington journalists, basically, not all of them, but a lot of them, feel this way, and they're very.
There were people laughing in the audience. The camera would turn, and they would catch. Now there were a lot of stony faces in there. Probably, I'm sure some of them.
If you have a heart, you wouldn't.
Right. That's right.
If this had been reversed, if this had been a conservative making fun of Obama and the Obama administration, I would have felt the same way. Mm-hmm. You just don't. There's certain things you don't do publicly. You don't make fun of people's in this. Family heritage, what state they're from, or in this case, appearance or makeup or whatever the case may be. That Mia, what's the Joe and
Mika Brzezinski?
Mika, that's her name.
Mm-hmm.
She said, to her credit, she said that. Do you have her quote?
Yeah, Mika Brzezinski said this: "Watching a wife and mother be humiliated on national television for her looks is deplorable. I've experienced insults about my appearance from the president. All women have a duty to unite when these attacks happen, and the White House, the Correspondents Association, owes Sarah an apology."
Now, that was one time where President Trump went over the line, I thought.
Yeah, that was bad.
Because he was making fun of her.
And this, she's a co-host on Morning Joe.
Facial surgery.
With Joe Scarborough.
I think it would. That was one other time.
She'd had some cosmetic surgery.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he poked fun at her and Joe because they showed up at my place or whatever, but she just had surgery. Mm-hmm. And that was terrible what he said about her.
But to her credit, Mika, she defended
And I think these are seasoned correspondents, these women who are speaking up and appalled by Michelle Wolf. They understand that if they don't speak up, then they are hypocrites.
Right.
They are absolute hypocrites for not defending these conservative women, which is what the point Michelle Malkin was getting at.
You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I would say today, say a prayer for Sarah Sanders.
And Kellyanne Conway.
And Kellyanne Conway, because she was also, I tell you what, I would like to know from Kellyanne and Sarah why you went to that thing in the first place. It's kind of like, what were you expecting?
I'm not blaming them for what happened to them. I'm just saying.
Well, I bet they won't go next year, I'll bet.
No, they won't go next year.
I'm kind of anxious to see the White House press briefing today to see what those White House correspondents do when Sarah Huckabee Sanders walks in that room today.
Yeah.
If
they get any class, they'll stand up and applaud her.
Yeah.
That's what I hope they do.
Yeah.
That's what I hope they do.
Yeah. All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, that's my name. With Ed, that's his name. And Fred, that's his name. You're listening to American Family Radio. By the way, if you want to watch this show, Walker's not here today, so I forgot to tell you. Here's what Walker would normally tell you, that you can watch the show and engage with the rest of the listeners if you'd like to on our Facebook page. So we have a Facebook page for Today's Issues on AFR. Go there and watch the live video stream. Also, we have a YouTube channel. So go to YouTube, type in Today's Issues live stream, and you can watch the show there as well. So take advantage of that. You're listening to American Family Radio. Yes, Fred.
Yeah, I think this is a good point to say hello to our listeners in Alaska. During our recent share-a-thon, we had several calls from listeners in Alaska.
Calls? Now, they called and made pledges?
Yeah, mm-hmm. They called and made pledges. So we don't have a radio station there in Alaska, so they're listening using the app.
Right.
So that's pretty cool.
While they're running from grizzly bears or whatever is going on up there.
There you go, stereotyping people from a state, Ed. Running from grizzly bears.
Hey, your moose is loose.
Hey, I think J.J. Jasper tells a story about his wife, Melanie. She lived up in Alaska for a while, and she's a Mississippi girl.
Oh.
Moved up to Alaska and lived there for a couple years or something, and said that they would come over the loudspeaker at Walmart and say, you're going to have to wait 10 minutes to go out to your car. There's a pack of wolves coming through the parking lot right now. Or something like, some kind of wild animal, grizzly bear or something.
Probably polar bear or something.
Oh, my goodness.
That.
Or polar bear. I think you got grizzlies and polar bears. But anyway.
Everyone's packing up there. If you don't know how to shoot.
Yeah, you're
dead.
You're
not make it 6 months.
No. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. We got to take a break here in just a minute. President Trump, by the way, went to Washington Township, Michigan.
Mm-hmm. That's where he was Saturday night.
Saturday night, instead of going to that correspondence dinner that we were talking about for the last few minutes. He's trying to rally the troops in Michigan, a key state for him.
He loves that environment. He just loves that. And they love him, too.
Yeah.
He just that's where he shines. You know, one of the last ones he did, I think, was somewhere in Pennsylvania. He actually threw away the script. He took that and just threw it in the air. He said, I'm not going to bother with that. Now, his handlers get really nervous.
Oh, sure.
They don't know what he's going to do next. But that's Donald Trump.
Right.
That's where he's comfortable.
Yeah, I tell you what he's doing, man. He is. I think he's laying down the gauntlet on this funding for the wall, for the border wall, because he said he will, quote, shut down the country or close down the country or something like that if he doesn't get border wall fencing.
Yeah.
Funding, or I should say, but border wall funding in September. Is it September?
September's when the continuing resolution has to.
Now, I don't get me wrong. I appreciate so much of what the president has done in his administration. He's followed through on so many promises that more than most presidents, especially to conservatives. But at the same time, I'm going to have to wait and see.
He's blinked a couple times, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. We'll see whether he does. When it comes to big... passing these big budgets and so forth. They're not really budgets. They're just free spending bills. We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us.
Next time on Today's Issues, we'll talk with George Barna of the American Culture and Faith Institute.
The purpose of what we do is to provide insight that will enable people to learn more about how faith can transform their life.
We'll also hear from Dr. Frank Turek, Sandy Rios, and newsmen Fred Jackson and Steve Jordahl. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. A couple of months ago, I told you about the Show Up Tour coming up to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon in September. And the Show Up Tour means all you got to do is show up to Washington, D.C., and we will take care of the rest. That is the Spiritual Heritage Tour in the fall, and we're almost sold out. You will love this tour if you've never been to our nation's capital. We're going to see it from a distinctively Christian perspective and a historically accurate perspective. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will be joining us to give talks all along the way. We're also going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate tour just preceding the Washington, D.C. tour if you want to do both. So for all the information on the September Show Up Tour, go to SpiritualHeritageTours.com. That's SpiritualHeritageTours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next. Since 1971, Liberty University's values have been defined by a commitment to excellence and a biblical worldview. Their mission of training champions for Christ has remained the foundation of everything they do. It's that mission that propels Liberty students to excellence in the classroom and beyond. More than 550 programs of study from undergrad to doctoral degrees, effectively preparing students to enter a competitive job market. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. That's liberty.edu. The White House Correspondents' Dinner quickly devolved into an X-rated anti-Trump smut fest. Preening journalist guffawed as a second-rate comedian uttered vulgarities that would make a rapper blush. But Michelle Wolf saved her most venomous attacks for Press Secretary Sarah Sanders, who was seated just a few feet away. I will not repeat what she said, but it was appalling. I kept waiting for someone in the room to muster the courage and decency to say enough. But no one rose to defend Ms. Sanders. There was no one to be found with honor or courage or decency. And that's why the American people hold American journalism with such little regard. The White House Press Association owes Ms. Sanders a public apology. And until that happens, I recommend President Trump give the White House Press Corps the heave-ho. Let them find some other place to spew their venom. Throw the fake news bombs out, Mr. President. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the program Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Tim here with you. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano and Fred Jackson. And we're taking a look at what's happening in the news. Hope you had a great weekend. I do want to talk at some point about North Korea, South Korea. When do you want to do that, Fred? Can we do that now?
Sure.
Go to it. Okay. This is potentially the biggest story of the 21st century as far as international events go. National security for the United States of America, world peace, mm-hmm. That's what you want to call it. Potentially, I'm saying, it would be rivaled only by 9/11. Now 9/11 is, a bad memory that we all have, but it was news nonetheless, and its impact has lasted until today. But now we have a potential for something that will bring peace in terms of the North Korean Peninsula and, as I say, regionally, and it will affect world relations. Go ahead and talk about it, if you would, Fred.
Well, last week we saw lots of pictures coming out of this summit between the leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, and the South Korean president, Moon Jae-in. They actually got together. And we saw pictures of them
hugging. Actually, too close.
They were hugging.
Yeah.
At one point, holding hands, and then they gave each other a hug. And right. And I was watching as that happened, and I mean, a little bit awkwardness there. And obviously, they're playing to the cameras. But as you point out, there were people like correspondents going back, you know, several decades, and they said they can't believe that this is happening. The coming together of the two Koreas.
This is the first time, I think, ever, right? Yes. Where the leaders from both North and South
exactly.
have met together.
And but the bigger story in all of this, and some people have actually suggested that President Trump needs a Nobel Peace Prize out of this. I wouldn't hold my breath on that. But that he deserves it because just go back a couple of months. It was President Trump laying out the threats to the North Korean leader that unless he backs off with his development of nuclear weapons, watch out. We, you know, he didn't say we're going to attack, but
fire and fury
and all that. And remember the condemnation.
No, I got a bigger red button than you got.
Yes, exactly.
Those
kind of, he said that.
Yeah. So remember all the condemnation that President Trump took over that. You know, what kind of rhetoric is this? You're never going to get anything. Well, lo and behold, just 10 days ago, the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, takes a little trip to China. And he meets with the Chinese. And then all of a sudden, coming back from that, they hold this summit, the two Korean leaders. Now, I would like to have been a fly on the wall in Beijing when that Chinese leader, they had a chat. I think China told the North Korean leader, all right, we've got to settle this down. This is not good for a lot of different reasons.
So it's China more than it is President Trump.
Well, but I think China, the Chinese leader probably said, I think Donald Trump is,
we'll
his,
do
threats,
it.
His threats are real.
Yeah.
And you don't want it, and we don't want it in our backyard, some
right.
kind of nuclear breakout. So get back home to North Korea. Dial up your friend down there in South Korea, and you guys get together and make sure there's lots of pictures.
So you're saying what we have here, President Trump, if you were to say the Chinese weighed in, certainly the Chinese, you know, Chinese don't want war
no.
either over there. So mm-mm. China may have told the North Koreans, hey, you need to do something to resolve this situation. Quit scaring the world to death every time you fire one of these missiles out there. But I think President Trump put pressure on China
mm-hmm.
to put pressure on mm-hmm. North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And, two, there could be some things happening to Kim Jong-un that has kind of forced him in this position, too. And maybe it is the idea of being annihilated. You know, and maybe he wants to stay in power as the dictator of that country. But also, you know, somebody said that his nuclear.
Yeah, the facility.
Facility.
Collapsed. The mountain in which they had been testing nuclear weapons, detonating. Because of that activity, it caused seismic problems and the mountain collapsed. So the facility's unusable. So they cannot continue their nuclearization program.
So he has no bargaining chip.
So, yeah. So now, because one of the things about President Trump, not only did he make threats, but he moved, there's two or three aircraft carriers mm-hmm. and all the ships that go with those, all those task forces out there in the ocean, in international waters, but off the coast of North Korea. And so you've got all that pressure from the U.S., probably from China, and then the apparent disaster there in terms of the collapse of their facility.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's got no. Now he really hasn't even got a bargaining chip.
The world, socialist, liberal, progressive elites, and the Democratic Party in America are scared to death that there will be peace in the region. And that is, it will credit President Trump.
Mm-hmm.
If President Trump is credited with this, and the South Korean president says he should win a Nobel Peace Prize.
Right.
Of course, we remember that President Obama won a Nobel Peace Prize.
For doing nothing.
Just for being sworn into office.
That's true.
Remember
that's,
that?
Yes.
And that just shows you how politicized that group is. Mm-hmm. They're far lefties. So the idea of these far lefties that they would have to give President Trump a Nobel Peace Prize is unfathomable. But the president of South Korea, no less, is suggesting this. And if this comes to pass, that is the denuclearization of North Korea, this will be
if there's unification or whatever in the Korean Peninsula, and President Trump is responsible, he would have to then create peace in the Middle East, solve Venezuela's issues, to end the nuclear program in Iran,
and fly to Jupiter and back,
and even then, the Nobel Peace Prize Committee would have to hold their nose to give him a peace prize.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But I
think you're going to see in the next two or three weeks, President Trump is going to meet somewhere with Kim Jong-un, and they're going to sit down. And President Trump, he's not all in on this yet. He said last week again, if he does not get a commitment for complete denuclearization of North Korea.
He's not going.
No, he says, I'll get up from the table and walk away.
Yeah.
Right.
And he'll do it.
Yeah, he'll do it. And another fellow that deserves a lot of credit here is Mike Pompeo.
Yes.
The former congressman from Kansas, who's now the Secretary of State for the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Evidently, President Trump really likes Mike Pompeo. I mean, because he's elevated him from congressman to CIA director, from CIA director to Secretary of State. I mean, of all the cabinet members, they seem to be the tightest. This is potentially, as I say, history-making news.
And Mike Pompeo, by the way, has moved on to the next front, Iran.
Yeah.
Where May 12th is when President Trump has to decide whether to continue with the deal that President Barack Obama made with Iran. And if you believe the rattling, the verbal rattling that we've heard, President Trump is not making any commitments to continue that. Mike Pompeo today has been in Amman, Jordan. And he's basically saying, yep, the president is not happy with this. We're not happy with verification principles in that Iranian deal. And we want much better assurances that the Iranians aren't still cooking up nuclear weapon material. So, North Korea is going to happen next month, but May 12th is also the deadline for the President Trump to agree to continue the Iranian deal.
Well, so you say. I think this is really all up to some federal judge somewhere to decide whether we'll continue with the Iranian deal or not, because that's who should decide this, not the president.
They decide everything else with regards to foreign policy.
Right,
that's right.
For this administration.
There's a federal judge somewhere assessing the president's feelings.
Yes. He's just anti,
Iran. I'm half joking, but I'm half joking. Because somewhere there's likely to be a federal judge weigh in on, you know, whether the president has authority to negate a, because they already did this DACA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're talking about this DACA executive order the same people who are saying that the president doesn't have authority in the area of immigration, that's reserved for the Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Are the same people who said we're good with the president unilaterally handling immigration when it comes to DACA when Obama was president.
Right.
You know, see what I'm saying here?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what happens here. But federal judges are deciding so much. All they need to do is find one liberal federal judge to, you know, speak for the whole country. So I don't know where this is going to end with these federal judges, because they can't be in. Well, no, the Congress won't impeach them.
Right.
And quite frankly, I don't know what it takes to impeach a federal judge exactly in terms of the numbers you would have to have in the Congress, but I doubt there's enough numbers to support an impeachment, just because the Democrats would say no, no matter what.
You right.
Because they like these judges intervening and stopping things that the president, that President Trump is doing. What about these folks on the border that were coming up through on the caravan? Whatever happened to them, Fred?
Well, they were coming up on this caravan, and about 200 of them approached the border. They've been in Tijuana, Mexico for the last several days, but they approached the border yesterday. And the American authorities basically said, because some of them are applying for asylum, they already have lawyers, American lawyers, on this side of the border, who want to work with these people coming up to get their asylum applications through.
But and there's a hearing.
And there's a hearing, up, yeah. But what happened yesterday when they arrived at this point, the American authorities said, we're already filled up. Now, what they mean by that is that there are a whole bunch of people ahead of you in line applying for asylum, so we can't deal with you right now. So my understanding, there may have been a few that made it into the application group, but for the most part, they're still sitting on the other side of the fence, and they haven't been able to make it across.
What do they think? They think they're just going to come here, and are they from Central America, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Honduras. Most of them are from
Honduras. So they thought they were going to come here and get political asylum?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're talking about the drug violence, the gang violence, and
now that we do accept America has a long tradition of accepting political exiles, right? Or exiles may not be the word.
Well, there's certain political criteria.
Political victims of political. How do you say this? What am I looking for? Refugees
persecution.
Persecution.
Yeah.
I think you have to prove. Now, I'm not an expert on this. This is probably a Abraham Hamilton the third question, but you have to prove that you as an individual are in danger.
Yes.
To be able to. So in other words, people are looking for me to kill me because of my political stance. I live under oppressive government. I don't think, generally speaking, we've allowed people in to declare political, to ask for political asylum simply because they live in a dangerous country. In other words, where everybody's in danger. I don't think you've been able to do that, and I think that this is what most of these asylum seekers are like in terms of this caravan.
And for the most part, over the last 8 or 9 years at least, they have been very much aware of these folks coming up from places like Honduras, that the American authorities had a catch-and-release attitude towards all this.
Yeah.
In other words, come on in, and we'll do a little hearing, and we'll get to your case in a couple of years' time. In the meantime, behave yourselves and go live with some relatives here in the United States.
Right.
And most of them don't show up again.
For their hearing in 2 years.
That's right.
Oh, no. Why would they? What's the downside?
Right.
Or what's the upside for them? You think people are going to come to the border and then catch and release, and we say, hey, you got a hearing in 19 months, so we'll see you back here then. And then they're off to St. Louis or Chicago or New York. You think they're going to come back for that? Oh, we got to get back for that hearing.
Yeah.
How are we going to, they're not going to do that. And they never,
right.
They don't do that. So
right.
That's kind of a joke. I don't know. This is a whole different topic, but it just does beg the question, will things ever change in Central America, for example, or even Mexico, economically, which would make it, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Why these people want to come here, I'm guessing, is they live in very poor conditions, obviously. But 100 years from now, are we going to be talking about those poor people in Central America? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Seems like things never change in a lot of these countries. Some of them would be considered third world, and unless they change their economic system,
right?
And they get rid of the corruptness in their government. You know, we have corruptness here too. In the U.S., but at least it's punished when it's brought out in the open. And people generally are against it, society is. But many of these, I guess I'm answering my own question, many places in the world, bribery and corruption is the way things have always been.
Right. And that's factored in. You know, I've talked to people who've been down to Mexico, you know, for a long stay for business, and they'll say, if you get pulled over by a policeman in Mexico, then they start to tell you all the things you've done wrong. And you just better be ready to pay X number of dollars right there on the spot, or they'll keep telling you, keep adding up your fines.
There's no appeals.
No. This is the way in much of the world we factor this in, and this is the way we do business down there, and that's the way people do it. This is how you do business. If you want to go get a permit to do something, you know part of the cost is going to be paying the guy who stamps your permit approved, and that's just part of the cost of doing business.
Well, Central America, same way, I guess. Most Central America, South America, you see what's happened with Venezuela, and that's, you know, that is threatening other countries there in South America. Socialism, you know, capitalism, I know, has, you know, things you could critique, but socialism just doesn't work. You know, over time,
even kind of the soft socialism of, you know, high taxation for more and more government, you know, provided services. You reach some sort of tipping point where the only way I'm going to build a business and succeed and thus hire people and create a better mousetrap is if I get to keep most of the profits or reinvest those profits into an expansion.
Incentivized.
But if I know 80% of what I make is going to be taken
by
the government, then I'm not going to risk capital to do that.
And you're not going to start business ventures in countries where you know that tomorrow the king of that country can come in and take your whole business
from you or shut you down.
So, you know, my dad used to have a saying that free enterprise or capitalism undergirded with Christian values is the best for the most, as they say. And we see that in the U.S. Why we become the wealthiest country in the world, the most prosperous, the most with the most opportunity for people, is because we let people find reward from their labor, you know, and try to balance that with the needs of our government. But if you take that away, then you take the incentive away.
Right.
And in most of the world, you have your haves and your have-nots, and that's it. America is, I don't know if it's unique, but the idea of a middle class is not found in most of the world. Like I said, either you have your kingpins or those who control everything, and then you have your peasants. But in America, you have the in-between, you know, where people know they can... They work hard. They make the right decisions in life. They have great ideas. They can move up the ladder, move up the chain.
And there's a very simple conclusion, you know, when you talk about this, the benefits of capitalism. I'm not aware of people trying to climb over the wall from the United States side to get to the other side.
Right.
What does that say to you? Nobody's getting in a raft trying to go, I got to make it to Cuba.
Right.
Huh? It's not happening.
Yeah.
In Florida.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Yeah. So if you're going to knock the American way of life, and we do have our problems, then why isn't that going the other direction?
Yeah. There's a reason. There's a reason people want to come here.
Yeah.
Because you have opportunity to make yourself better. You know, we've said before, we understand why a lot of these people want to come here, and they should come legally. That's the issue. But we understand why they want to come.
Well, and I'll say this, and I hope this is not offensive if we have Hispanics, listening to the program. But in the town that I live in, we have a couple of Mexican restaurants, and the people who started those, they're family oriented, and now they have hired a lot. It's all Mexicans working there, and they work like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just telling you, you just never seen more hardworking people. Obviously, it's Mexicans can do more than open a restaurant. I mean, they do whatever they want, but they can do that here.
Yes,
they can open up a restaurant, and I mean, it always gets an A in terms of the city's examination of health and safety and all that. Food's great. They work like crazy. They're always buzzing around your table. Can I get you this? Can I get you that? Mm-hmm. You know, great service, great food. And you can come to this country and you can do that.
That's right.
Whereas you I guess, can't do that. You can't just start it up.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what people come to this country to do.
Mm-hmm.
These people work hard and they start a business because you can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, these folks that are at the come up, were they going to turn them away?
Well, for right now, they're being told there's no room, there's no capacity to look at their application for asylum. They can't do that. They don't have the manpower. They don't have the space to take these people in. That's what they've been told.
So will they do camp out?
They camp out on the other side. There's actually a tent city there in Tijuana right now.
Mm-hmm. And that is technically on. They're in Mexico. They're still in Mexico.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, in Mexico, Mexico let these folks come up through their country knowing they were en route to America, right?
That's right.
That doesn't help build relations between Mexico and America. People are always saying, well, Trump's to blame for that. Well, no, not when Mexico knows that people are flooding our country illegally and they're doing nothing to help us stop it.
Mm-hmm.
That's on them. And that's a reason we should not be, you know.
Donald Trump said the kind of things that a lot of Americans thought during the Obama administration when the Mexican government was training people. Remember, they had government documents how to get into America illegally. Where do you go? What do you do? What do you avoid doing? Mm. It was on government stationery.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about who started what in terms of ill will, it was the Mexican government. And then Donald Trump came along and said, well, I'm not going to let you get away with that anymore. We're going to build a wall. Mexico's paying for it. Whether or not that ever happens, I don't know. Right. But you can't blame President Trump when under the Obama administration, the Mexican government was training their people on how to break the laws and get into this country illegally.
Well, how many billions is it a year that come back to Mexico from those Mexicans living in the United States?
It's their second highest source of revenue. Number one is tourism in Mexico. Number two is money coming into Mexico from the United States, mm-hmm. from people who work here. Now, some of those may be legal, mm-hmm. but it's that money going south of the border is their second highest source of income.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I'm just saying that, you know, I know this is speaking broadly and generally, but if these countries like Mexico and Central American countries could, if the folks there would work on changing, they've got vast natural resources mm-hmm. in this part of the world. And you mentioned the work ethic of so many that there's no reason why they couldn't develop a country like America, you know, on their own.
Right.
But, of course, you've got to get past everything we mentioned earlier, and that is the centuries-old way of the world, and that is corruption in government, bribery. You know, now we've got serious problems in these parts of the world with drug lords that run countries. So, I don't, you know, it's not easily solvable. Plus, you don't have a foundation. I guess I've just answered my own question. Why 100 years from now we'll be saying, why do these people keep coming here? Is because unless you have a foundation, a constitutional republic, that and a government that allows for reward for, you know, for hard work and money made, then you're never going to change that particular region, wherever that may be found. I think China's trying to hybrid it. We'll see how that works out. You know, they're trying to keep communism while inviting capitalism. We'll see if that experiment works out. So far, it's doing good for somebody over there,
mm-hmm.
huh? Because every stinking thing we buy here in this country, besides Mexican food, is made in China. We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.